Chris Herring, you recently wrote about the Oklahoma City Thunder and how they are slowly becoming the Golden State Warriors of old. So to start it off, what was the key part of the blueprint that built that dynasty?
Well, I think we'd be, you know, kind of selling it short if we said anything other than Steph Curry's otherworldly shooting ability, Klay Thompson's otherworldly shooting ability, pairing them together and then adding on pieces and parts that kind of boosted that even further. Really good screening, Kevin Durant, you know, over time, great defense to put around those guys, Draymond Green, the ability to play the five and have that death lineup. And I think because they were so good at shooting, there were some things that were overlooked, in particular the fact that even though they were really good at running pick and roll, Steve Kerr decided we can kind of throw a curveball at teams and not rely solely on the pick and roll. We can really make teams work and really keep them off balance. So they ran a bunch of screens from different places, not just the big man coming up and setting a pick for Steph, but Iguodala setting picks for Steph. Steph setting picks for Iguodala. Steph setting picks for just about everybody within their lineup. Everybody defensively wants to chase Steph to make sure he doesn't get a shot off. But if you're chasing him at all costs and then Steph screens for someone else to go backdoor, you're screwed defensively. And they did that a lot. And Golden State led that the league in that category for years. And right now, Golden State is second in that category to Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City is a crazy good jump shooting team, the best statistically that we've ever seen. So that's a big part of it.
They drafted Steph in 09. They drafted Klay in 11. They drafted Draymond in 12, won their first title in 2015. Titles came again in 2017, 2018, and 2022. And don't argue with me, people. Their team that lost to the Cavs was a better team than all of those. Sorry. Just saying. Anyway, you said OKC does a couple things like what the Dubs did on the court. What is it that you're seeing from them that makes you think we could be on the cusp of a special run from the Thunder?
Well, again, I think it starts with shooting. Oklahoma City very quietly, because I think just because they're a smaller market, people didn't expect that much of them this year. They're still the second youngest team in the league, like right behind San Antonio by, I think, a tenth of a year age-wise. So people assume that they're too young to really get it done. By the way, they're in first place as we speak right now in the West. But they are really, really, really good at shooting. They shoot the three better than anybody in the league.
Giddy makes his move on Thybul. Outside to Dort. Loads up the three and knocks it down.
They get something like 23 wide open three-pointers per game, which speaks to you about the spacing that they're getting. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has a ton of driving lanes and drives the ball to the basket more than any player in the league.
The Thunder right back on the attack, and it's SGA driving right by Gafford, got to the rim.
I think we'd be, again, lying to ourselves if we didn't mention Chet Holmgren very high in this conversation. He's someone that they didn't have last year because of his injury. And so, you know, this is essentially his rookie season. He is shooting the ball basically 40% from three on high volume.
Holmgren, almost the same spot where he knocked down the shot last night to send it in overtime, and he knocks down his first three here tonight.
Jalen Williams is a guy that I don't think it'll be too much longer before we're having all-star conversations about him, despite him being a second-year guy. He has essentially the highest effective field goal percentage on jump shots that we've seen since Kevin Durant, back when he was a member of the Thunder.
We'll get it to a wide open shooter. There is Jalen Williams, and that time he registers the triple.
So we're looking at some crazy stuff here, just as far as how talented this team is from three, from mid-range with their big, and this is a team that is still kind of in their infancy considering the youth of the guys, and not to mention that massive stable of draft picks that they've got down the line that they're going to be able to use at some point.
Short version, OKC coming. The Oklahoma City Thunder are currently sitting atop the Western Conference. Not bad for a team that's also one of the youngest in the league. But how are they dominating the way they are so quickly? After all, this core of MVP candidate Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, rookie phenom Chet Holmgren, and second-year star Jalen Williams have barely played together. Still, the record stands for itself, and with all the makings of a new, dominant Big Three, the potential of this Thunder squad is reminding ESPN senior writer Chris Herring of a Warriors team at the start of their own dynasty. So today, Herring explains how the numbers don't lie, and tells us exactly why the Thunder's ascension to the top might just be inevitable. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Wednesday, March 6th. This is ESPN Daily. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, Chris, before we get to the Thunder, we need to start with the Warriors and Wardell Stephen Curry. Was there a moment early in Steph's run that made you think this team is on the verge of dominating the league at that point?
Man, I mean, not right away. I mean, keep in mind, Steph was a guy that had so many ankle injuries and kind of lower body injuries where even to the point where Golden State did not max him, I think is an important part of how they kind of created that dynasty. I think he was getting, was it $12 million a year in his second contract, where it was kind of like a prove that you can stay healthy, good faith sort of thing, that everybody knew he had the talent, but he was just struggling to stay healthy. I think I was there for kind of the moment that truly started to cement his stardom, quite frankly. He had a 50-point game at the Garden when I was covering the Knicks for the Wall Street Journal.
Curry for three. Wow! Unbelievable! Making it rain in New York. Curry, why not? For three! Bingo!
And the Knicks crowd is stunned.
Curry off the screen. Got enough room. Again! Butter! Steph Curry! His 11th three of the night.
And it was like, man, this guy could really shoot. And we knew that, but to do it there, I mean, and specifically the Garden, where we're so used to seeing the LeBrons, the Kobes, the Michaels kind of put on their Sunday best when they're playing in front of that crowd specifically. And so, again, did we know then that, there'd be a dynasty? Not necessarily. But I think that there were more moments like that where he just had these supernova performances where he could really shoot. I remember very vividly the double bang Mike Breen call where Steph hits that crazy game winner against Oklahoma City at the end of a game on ABC.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining. The brilliant shooting of Stephen Curry continues, and he ties the NBA record with his 12th three-pointer of the game.
There were enough moments like that, I think, over time where you're like, this dude is just different.
Was there any particular moment where you saw the same thing brewing in OKC in terms of one particular performance that made you think, hold up, we got something here?
I definitely highlight one in the story that I just wrote. I looked back at a game that they had in late January against the Blazers, who, we know the Blazers are not that great this year. They're rebuilding. But specifically, they are down toward the end of the game. And Jalen Williams comes down and hits one jumper from the left wing in the fourth quarter.
J-Dub's going to pull up left side. Avoided Simons, and it's back to a one-point game.
Then a couple plays later, hits another jumper from the exact same spot. And then when the game is on the line, they're tied 109-109 with about 10 seconds left in the game. Jalen Williams is the guy dribbling the ball at half court. Not Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, not their MVP candidate, who has more 30-point games than anybody in the league by far this year. But Jalen Williams, their second-year guard, who, again, is super talented. It's not to take that away from him. But most teams are going to make sure that their MVP candidate has the ball. Instead, what OKC does on this play, and by the way, this was a design play call for Jalen Williams. Mm-hmm. They put the ball in Jalen Williams' hands.
Going to run this down as much as possible.
And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander flashes and kind of runs hard to the top of the key. And because of that, his defender, but then also the guy that was guarding Jalen Williams, Jeremy Grant, a good player, solid player, races to kind of go make sure that Shea is accounted for. So essentially, Shea takes two players with him. And because of it, Jalen Williams gets a switch on to Anfernee Simons, who is not only the shortest player on the court, but probably the least defensive savvy. And Jalen Williams very easily, a 6'5 guy, raises up and hits a jumper from basically the exact same spot he'd hit those two jumpers from before.
Pulls up, looking for the lead, and he got it. Jalen Williams, 2 seconds, 111-109.
A spot that he is shooting 60% from on the floor, from mid-range in the two-point range on the left side of the floor. So this is very much exactly what they wanted. They knew that they could use Shea as a decoy. So the fact that you've got an MVP candidate, you've got a secondary guy who's in his second year who is knocking jumpers down at the clip that I just mentioned, and then you've got a first-year guy or a rookie guy, however you want to phrase it, because obviously Chet got drafted 2 years ago. This is a squad, and these are just three guys of that squad, but they play top five level defense. They are a team that basically, when we break it down, is number one in several offensive categories, despite this being the first time that these three guys have played together. And they have a pretty good group of role players as well. They're beating opponents by 10 points per 100 possessions, despite the fact that you've got Shea, who's 25, Jalen Williams, who's 22, and Chet, who's 21. It's scary what they could potentially accomplish.
If we're going to make that comparison as Jalen Williams to, I guess, Klay Thompson and Shea to Steph, I mean, what makes Shea stand out so much in a league full of stars right now?
So let's be very clear. Nobody is Steph. Shea is not the shooter that Steph is. We understand that. But Shea is bigger than Steph, taller than Steph. He is, I think most people would say, more physical than Steph. He can get to the basket in a different way. And he's a little bit more imposing when he gets to the basket because he's bigger than him. So that's a big difference. But I think Shea might have more of an all-around game, considering kind of he's a more imposing figure once he gets into the paint than Steph is. Steph is fantastic. He's crafty. But Shea, keep in mind, Shea's just 25. And I think it's easy to forget that because he's kind of had two stages of his career already, considering that he started somewhere else and then came to Oklahoma City. So there's that with him. And similar with Klay and Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams is doing more off the dribble, I think, than Klay did initially. Klay was just such a talented shooter that he was coming off screens a lot. If you remember all the way back to the beginning of when Mark Jackson was coaching the Warriors, part of the big shift in their offense once Steve Kerr got there, Steve Kerr looked at the numbers and said, why are they posting Klay so much? Mark Jackson really wanted Klay Thompson to post up a lot because he was a big guard. So that's something that, you know, like Jalen Williams isn't doing much of that, but he's doing a lot more off the dribble and he's capable of it and he's knocking down those shots. So again, he's a slightly different player, but you know, he's not Klay Thompson in, as far as just running him off of screens, but he does a lot of stuff without needing the screens all the time.
And of course, you've got to factor in Chet Holmgren as well.
I think he is what has the potential to set them apart more than anything, where Golden State never really had a big man who could just step out and shoot. Now, if you want to say Kevin Durant, that's one thing, but obviously, you know, it's Kevin Durant. Chet Holmgren is Durant's size kind of build, but he's a legitimate center who wants to be there at the basket, who wants to erase shots at the basket, is knocking down threes at a 40% clip, will put the ball on the floor if you close out on him too hard and embarrass you and dunk on you. That's what has the potential to really set them apart long term, because Golden State obviously is using Draymond at the five, a guy that can do plenty and is a very skilled player, can screen for Steph, can throw lobs for people, great off the short roll, but he's never been a three-point shooter. Even at his best, he's normally not a very good three-point shooter. Chet is, and this is just the beginning for him.
The Thunder beat the Celtics back in January, and Derek White was impressed, saying, quote, they do a good job of creating confusion. They're a tough team to guard, end quote. And Kristaps Porzingis told everyone that the win was no accident.
That's a talented young team, and I don't believe this was some like fluke game for them.
What do you think the Thunder have done that have made other teams, even top tier ones, struggle so much against them?
Well, I think mostly it's always a challenge when you have a team that just doesn't have any immediate weaknesses on offense. I don't think anybody was expecting that they'd be on pace to be anywhere near 60 wins this year, or kind of top of the West. there was this great piece that ran, I think, last week on ESPN.com. Tim Bontemps and Kevin Pelton wrote it, and it was a stat about how it's becoming kind of more and more impossible for defenders to really guard in today's NBA. And the stat specifically was that the tracking data that exists for, you know, all the cameras that are on the court and everything else to show the way that space is being utilized on the court, offenses have expanded by approximately 5%, used 5% more of the half court than they did 2 years ago. But defenses have only been able to expand like 0.03% in that same time range. Because they, at a certain point, it's like we can't give up anything else. Our defense is going to snap and break if we expand too much further. It's just not going to be able to sustain. And I think that I think the Thunder are probably the best example of that. Of like, over the last year, I would venture to guess their offense has expanded by more than 5% because of Chet Holmgren's presence and the fact that he can be a trailer when he's coming back from the defensive end on a three. The fact that he can do that, the fact that, you know, basically anybody and everybody on this team is pretty comfortable out there. And so I think that that's part of it. I think that, again, the fact that this team kind of replicates what the Warriors were doing with all the screening from guards. I gave you the example of Jalen Williams hitting that game-winning shot. If Shai looks like he's going to screen or just like he's going to spot up or anything, you can't leave Shai on an island. So what do you do with other guys that, you know, when they see that mismatch, someone's open? And more or less, that's what's happened, is that Shai, when he finds the defense that's spaced out, he's going to drive to the basket. If you collapse on him at the basket, he's just going to throw a kick out. And oh, by the way, when he's done that, the Thunder players on average have 8 feet of open space between them and the closest defender when they let off a three. Like, that's nuts. That is a crazy statistic, but that's what we're talking about here and why they're shooting something like 43% when they get those looks. It's what makes them so impossible to defend, because they like to pass the ball. They like to screen for each other. They're not hesitating to take these open shots because they're so good at making them.
Coming up, can OKC continue this dominance throughout the playoffs? Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. All right, Chris, we highlighted what this OKC team does well. What would you say their weaknesses are, though?
So, you know, if I'm going to start with the shooting on the one side, I'll start with it here, too. I was alluding to the fact that not everybody in this rotation is a great shooter. I think that even though he shot better this year, Lu Dort is someone that is going to be challenged of kind of like, do we trust you? In the same way that Jaylen Brown was against the Warriors the other day. It backfired, and Jaylen Brown showed he was capable of making the shots. I think teams are going to test Lu Dort in a similar way come playoff time, but he's not the biggest liability that they've got out there. Teams more and more are daring Josh Giddey to shoot the ball. And if you had asked people last year, 2 years ago, the Thunder are going to have a big three in the next year or two, which players are going to comprise that? A lot of people would have said Josh Giddey, because he was a guy that was flirting with triple-doubles quite frequently as a rookie, as a second-year guy. he's very talented as a ball handler, but he's kind of struggling just as much now as he was as a rookie and in his second year as a three-point shooter. You're going to take your chances with him, especially when the rest of the offense is just so good and so efficient. So that is something that I think that the Thunder have had to scheme for. If I'm being honest with you, I think that was part of why they swung the trade for Gordon Hayward, is that if Josh Giddey struggles in the playoffs, particularly because keep in mind, he's a starter for this team. So if he struggles in the playoffs, you can then pull Josh Giddey and you can plug in a guy that is a more efficient shooter, a good playmaker in Gordon Hayward. The other one that I will readily point out too is that because they're such a great spaced out offense, they really don't rebound the ball very well on offense, which, okay, if you're making a lot of shots and you're as efficient as they are, you don't have to offensive rebound, but defensively, how well can you rebound? And as we were mentioning before, Chet is still very slight of frame, even though he's tougher than he looks. And this is a defense that is, you know, mostly guard wing oriented. And so because of that, they're very good at taking the ball away. They're very good at turning the opponent over, but opposing offenses have been good at grabbing their own boards against this team. So that is something that will be looked at in the playoffs, that will be criticized if they do get just slaughtered from a rebounding standpoint, the way that a team like Cleveland did last year against the Knicks in the first round, where they just couldn't grab a board. Those are probably their two biggest weaknesses, is kind of how does Giddey operate offensively now that teams are just daring him to shoot, and how do they rebound on the defensive end?
Do you buy the you have to learn how to lose before you can learn how to win in general in the NBA? And does OKC fall into this category as you see it?
I think to some extent you do. I mean, it's not to say that I don't think that they could win a round. I mean, look, if they finish as a one seed, I think they're going to be expected to win. Now, could that look interesting if the eight seed is like Golden State? It's going to be fascinating in the same way that I think the Kings were last year against Golden State. I do tend to think that there's truth to that, of needing to at least play a hard-fought series before you can win one. And, you know, I think a good example to use here, there are a couple, obviously. We're watching Boston go through it right now of, you know, they've gotten really close and knocked on the door. They've made it to a finals and they haven't quite done it. I thought that Ja Morant and the Grizzlies were a really good example of that, of playing Utah more competitively than a lot of us expected when Utah was a one seed. And, you know, then breaking through and then giving the Warriors, you know, a lot to handle, even when Ja was hurt in that series. But I do think that there's something to the idea of, like, it's normally not going to come together for you the very first time. Could the Thunder win a series, maybe even two series, just because they're really unusual and because they give teams so much trouble? This is a team that we're talking about, again, that ranks essentially in the top five on offense and defense. Those are generally teams that have championship contender written all over them. So I'm certainly not going to rule out that they can win a couple series. I'd be a little surprised if they were just to run through the playoffs. You normally have to get used to the physicality, and I think the rebounding part of it is kind of a blinking red light here too, that's part of what playoff basketball is rebounding.
I happen to believe that the Los Angeles Lakers and their veteran setup are a team that is better built for the playoffs than they are for the regular season, as a result of being able to face the same team over and over versus different ones in different nights.
Okay.
But is there anybody, including the Lakers, who you think are actually a bad matchup for OKC should they meet them in the tournament?
I mean, I wouldn't want to play Denver. I just think, you know, if you're saying that rebounding is going to be an issue for us, we know Denver can play physically. We know that Denver can, you know, win a game having to utilize the three-point line because of Michael Porter and Joker. And, you know, I just think a team with experience, and any of these teams that end up in the playoffs are likely to have more experience than Oklahoma City. But, yeah, I mean, I just think that would be a challenge, like Joker against a team that is struggling in the middle. Chet is fantastic and, again, is more physical than he gets credit for, but that's a different level of physicality where, you know, Joker is making Draymond and Golden State and the Lakers look silly. So what does that equate to when you're talking about a young team that is somewhat slight and inexperienced? Maybe that's unfair to say the champs would make them potentially look a little silly, but it would be fun to watch. And I'm more than anything, I'm excited regardless of how it plays. I'm not going to say they're playing with house money. It is a one seed. I don't think it works that way if they finish that way, but I don't think expectations are that high for them. Maybe in the building they are, but the outside world I don't know how many people could tell you readily that they're in first place right now. And I think that maybe that works to their advantage and maybe it allows them to feel a little bit less pressure. I think whatever happens with them, I think we'll all be ready to see them and kind of more ready for them to, you know, to be a contender next year, regardless of what happens, because you're winning 55, 60 games as a team that is basically a core that is really in its first year playing together. That's scary stuff. When everybody's 25 or younger, that's scary stuff. So they're going to be here for a while, God willing, that there's no injuries or anything like that.
Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me, as always.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.